I'm joined in studio this evening by Richard Coles. We're going to be talking about leadership and interesting way of coming at it. And as I led into the conversation, the last place that I would typically look for some leadership direction might be the writings of Shackleton. Richard, tell us a little bit about who Shackleton was and what, you know, you're looking at his book, right, or the book that was written about his Arctic exploration, Shackleton's Way, it's called.
This is the very book, James, that I picked up in Singapore at a bookstore. I was there on a course, delivering a course, and before the flight back, I went to the bookstore, and I typically go to the management leadership section, and I saw this, and I was intrigued by this because I love an adventure story. Who doesn't? But to marry it up with leadership story as well is perfect mix for me. It's called Shackleton's Way, Leadership Lessons from the Great Antarctic Explorer by Margot Morrell. So I got back to Dubai, and I was with Emirates then leadership skills training manager. And they're very open to new ideas, and I have to give them full credit. They allowed me to, or they supported me in developing this into a seminar. And we actually delivered that seminar in the Emirates Auditorium. And subsequently, it went well. It actually helped me go around the world. Not around the world, but we went to India, we went to Australia, and a few other places to tell the story. But the press here, the media, were fantastic in picking up on the story. Because like you said earlier, it's bringing an ice story to the desert.
Yeah. And we're talking 1914 as well. I mean, this isn't, you know, an Adrian Hayes kind of story from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. This is 1914.
Yeah. Well, Adrian's got an incredible story.
Oh, isn't it? It's fantastic. It really in fact, I haven't had Adrian in here for a while. So we're just about due to get Adrian Hayes.
We were going to work we're going to do something together one day. But because he really has done that. And he's been there. It's a story from 1914 to 1916. It's about Shackleton and his 27 men and their survival and how they survived from the wreck of their ship, the Endurance, in the crushing Antarctic ice. And they were stranded 1,200 miles from civilization, James. So, I mean, nobody knew them. There were no faxes. There were no emails.
There were no aircraft flying over to look for them.
Yeah. They didn't know where they were for a long period of time. So they had no hope of escape, no means of communication. The temperature was so low that the men could hear the water freeze. They survived on a diet of penguins, dogs, and seals. And when the ice began to break up, Shackleton set out to save them all on his heroic 800-mile trip across the frigid South Atlantic in little more than a rowboat. One thing that happened in this story, I was telling it in Australia. I went to Perth and Melbourne, and then they sent me to Sydney. And there in Sydney is the Maritime Museum.
Right.
It actually happened. We were delivering this for some travel agents in Sydney in the Theatrette at the Maritime Museum at Darling Harbour. But also there was an exhibition of Shackleton's things and other explorers,
fantastic,
too. And the James Caird, which he did this incredible journey in, this 800-mile journey, was there. Now, to top off the evening after we had dinner, we walked across Darling Harbour to the IMAX where the Shackleton film was on.
Wow.
So it was a triple win for everybody. All these guests, of course, were enthusiasts, so they were specially selected, as well as great supporters of Emirates in those days. So, yeah, it was a great experience, and I've had plenty of experiences like that. But, James, you know, one of the other experience that was equally enjoyable but very low profile was delivering this for my son's fifth grade class in Muscat.
Isn't that always the most rewarding?
Absolutely.
When you take this material, and I, as a professor, I strive to do this several times a year. Take the material that I'm delivering to a university audience, and the same material, not diluting it, just it's all in the presentation, and presenting it to a group of grade 5, 6, 7 students.
I was more nervous.
Well, they're more honest, aren't they?
They're very much. The questions were incredible. You had to be really spot on, as you do everywhere. And, of course, before I do a Shackleton full-day seminar, I've got to double-check my facts and figures. Yeah. It's not a complicated story, but it is a story that tends to create many questions.
If you were to look at that, the Shackleton story, and say, okay, well, what are his, when you talk about the leadership as dispensed by Shackleton,
right?
What's the core of that message? What are the core points?
Sure, good. Well, he he wasn't a natural leader. He had to develop leadership.
We all often think of leaders as natural. I mean, he was running the show.
Yeah, but don't forget, he was on expeditions as a participant, as a crew member, and those were the ones before 1914 where he wasn't leading them, but he learned from other leadership and other leadership that wasn't really very effective. Expeditions where men went crazy, they starved, they were unsuccessful, and so forth. And then Shackleton got the finance together, and that was the hard part, for the 1914-1916 expedition. He wasn't a very good financier, and he didn't do very well on that side, and his private life wasn't all that successful. Where he was most successful was leading a group of people, men in those days, in an effort of exploration, which was obviously very, very dangerous.
So he was really an expert at motivating people and, leadership via motivation.
Yeah. He motivated them when times were worse and it looked like they weren't going to make it. Then his leadership came to the fore, which reminds me of a great Australian sort of a captain, Steve Waugh. I once interviewed him, and I asked him, when does your leadership really come to the fore? He says, well, I have a team, and they lead themselves, but when we're against it, when we're in trouble as far as the match is concerned, then my leadership comes. Leadership skills are really needed, and then I come and lead the men and give them the optimism and the motivation that they can win this match. And actually, he said he relished that moment more than they were just winning. I suspect Ricky Ponting, who's the captain now, and they've just had a completely successful Australian summer of wins, also would say that. Look, he also hired outstanding crew. He was very good. He was very creative as a recruiter.
Which is, again, another big aspect of a good leader, is recognizing those people who have the talents that are going to work together in the team. And you might not have the talents. As you said, he didn't have some of these talents.
He wasn't
ashamed to admit that, look, I'm not good at XYZ, so I'm going to hire the best people to do that, and they're going to complement this whole team.
Exactly. His form of recruitment was to get a core management team, if I can call that, of people who he had already gone on journeys with before.
So with people you go up the ladder, it's your relationships, it's friends. Those are when push comes to shove, those are the people you know.
Yeah.
And those are the people you're going to go back to.
Exactly. You can see this in the
film. Don't burn your bridges.
Right. You need them. I mean, they were friends first, but they were also colleagues. He trusted them. They were loyal. They were experts at what they did. And therefore, he chose them first. And then around this core management team, he recruited the rest of the 27 men. Were there scientists, there were farmers, there were doctors, there were teachers, etc. But he realized his strengths, he realized his weaknesses. So what he tried to do, as you said correctly, is recruit people that would help to complement each other and strengthen the team. You know that.
Do you think when you look at that whole idea and you fast forward to 2010, do you think, from your observations as someone who goes out and trains and works with companies, that we're doing that, that people do that enough?
Well, yeah. Well, yes. I mean, I recently did a small individual survey of a number of recruitment, HR companies, and how they recruit people. And I asked them, what kind of questions do you ask people today who you want on board your company? And it went something like this. They ask a question like, are you... How do you feel about change? Well, I understand change. I understand change. I understand Carter's 8 stages, and I understand that change is very important. Great. Give us an example of how you initiated change in the last organization, whether it was successful or not. So you better have an answer, right?
Yeah.
Next question, which complements this, how do you feel about teams? Oh, I think teams are great. Everybody should be part of teams. This is the way we operate today. Great. Give us an example of you and your team and some change that you initiated to success in the last 12 months. Next question about creativity. Are you creative, Mr. Coles? Yes, I'm creative. I've done a lot of creativity. Great. Give us an example of how you did some creative change with your team in the last 12 months. And then the next question is, are you a problem solver? Yes, I solve problems. Fine. Give us an example of a problem you solved and you changed it into a creative solution with your team in the last 12 months, or something like this.
Yeah.
In other words, companies, I think, James, want these kind of people now on their teams.
And it's finding them. Yeah. I'm joined in studio by Richard Coles. We're talking about leadership. We're talking about leadership and leadership ideas based on the writings of Shackleton and based on the experiences of Shackleton as he did his Antarctic explorations and ultimately got stuck and lost for 2 years and how he managed to make it work. We're going to go to a quick pause. When we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation. I'm joined in studio by Richard Coles. We're talking about leadership and we're talking about it from the writings and, well, not really the writings, the experiences of Shackleton. And remind us again who he was, because we've got a few people who have just tuned in, and they're going to say, who's Shackleton?
Well, he was an Antarctic explorer. He wasn't, it's a funny thing about Shackleton, he wasn't successful in any of his expeditions.
He was a failure, really, which is, always takes me back when I was looking at this and listening. This is the classic Tom Peters sort of axiom, right. Is that if you're going to fail, fail really big.
Yeah.
And he's exactly that.
Well, you know, it's a little bit like the Apollo 13 story. They're heading for the moon, and that was called a successful failure because they actually got the men back to Earth alive, the three guys in the capsule. But Shackleton had 27 men, and they all submit that they survived because of the leadership skills of Shackleton.
And he claims he doesn't have any leadership skills.
Well, he was very modest about that. But as you were asking me, he had certain competencies that would work today. I mean, some people, naysayers or doubters, will ask me, why do you use a story that's almost 100 years old and use it as a model for leadership today? Well, there's a fairly clear answer on that. Number one, people love an adventure story. Number two, I do realize that people have short attention spans, and if you can use a model, if you can use something different, in my older age, I've become more creative, perhaps, and I do realize in the classroom that people need to be engaged, enthused, and dare I say, even entertained. In a way. I use multimedia a lot, not just for the Shackleton story, but many things I do, a lot of theme work I do. So, and I find that I can leverage off the story leadership lessons for today. I can draw comparisons. For instance, the recruitment, getting the best from each individual, leading effectively in a crisis, and so on and so forth.
I guess a big piece of his leadership skill was the ability to listen. And he listened to those 26 men.
Yeah.
And from their reactions to the situation, was able to leverage their talents and play them in a sense off each other to get the best.
Yes, he put his cabin or his sleeping quarters on the Endurance in a spot next to this small bookcase, if I can call it. They had a sort of a library where the guys went for their books and games and so forth. So he was next door. The reason he did that was he could have one-on-one conversations with them. Now, he had some men who obviously...
He could have had the back cabin, the corner.
Yeah, he could have hidden himself.
Yeah.
He didn't have a curtain or anything. It was like, if I can say, it's like an office open.
He was in the middle of all the cubicles right next to the working stiffs.
When the cabin had to be cleaned and the deck had to be scrubbed or some grub had to be sorted out or a party had to be planned because they tried on the Endurance when they were beset by ice, they had to do lots of activities, celebrations and so forth. Shackleton was in the forefront. He was a tremendous, he had tremendous optimism. He was a great storyteller.
That's a real big piece of when we talk about leadership. And I, you know, you take those examples back into the classroom and back to the organizations you work with. For all the failings of leaders and things that they can't do, those leaders who are optimistic, because everyone has those people around them who are naysayers, who the half empty people.
Yeah.
We talk about cups
well,
of water
we talked about in a class today. We were talking about the value of humor in business today, and is there a place for humor? And I remember in
a lot of places where they're saying no, there's no value for that today.
Well,
times are tough.
But the times are tough. But you can still be a leader who has a sense of humor, can tell a story. I mean, I used to have in Holland. I remember I used to go to the meetings at head office, and we started off with a cup of coffee typically, and a story, and a little bit of maybe a laugh about something, and all of a sudden, the leader of the meeting would say, now. And at the moment, we know that now meant it's down to business. And then we ended in a casual way as well, no matter how serious the meeting was. So I think there is room to relax your team, to get them to...
Do you think it's an art figuring out how to transition from the relaxing to the work phase and out? Is that the art of leadership?
I'm
putting you on the spot there.
No, that's fine. Well, when you talked about the art of relaxation, the art of being able to appear to be in control, I think as a leader, there's many things you have to do and must do to show that you are in control. And one of them is to keep your temper under control, I think. And there's to keep your sense of humor, to keep your ability to listen to the your men and women on your team. And I think that the fitness is a very important thing today as well, that your leader is that you're physically fit and that you're able to get through a very tough week.
Yeah. I mean, it does take endurance and, you know, physical, as you're saying, you know, sleep deprivation, the simple stress of working through problems, and that's a mental activity, but the mental activity is always coupled with your physical activity of, you know, going for that jog, just going for the walk, keeping fit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, as I said to my group today, I mean, how many of you are doing cycling or walking or some swimming? And there's very few people. And I think they need to look after themselves because they did explain to me today, these salesmen I was working with, what kind of working day they have.
Yeah.
And I think I heard it on the program earlier as I was driving here. We work long hours here.
Yeah.
Now, in Muscat, it's maybe not quite as long, but in Dubai, you do work long hours. You need endurance, if you use the name of the ship. Yeah. You need endurance to get through a working week.
You know what, I think part of the issue that we face here, and everywhere, I mean, I think it's a global phenomenon now, is time, managing the time that you have. And I often sit with people and they say the same thing. I have no time to do exercise. I say, well, hold a second. Do you have 40 minutes where you can go for a walk? And you say, well, yeah, but my lunch. You say, well, okay, half an hour then. Half an hour for your lunch, half if you've got an hour. And if not, then 15 minutes that you can either walk some stairs, go walk around the building, just get out and a brisk walk. You know, and then people say, oh, well, then I'm going to be sweaty. And say, well, you know what? You need to have another shirt and some deodorant with you then too. And, you know, for every excuse, there's an answer.
There's absolutely an answer. You know, what Shackleton did with these men when they actually couldn't go anywhere, they played football on the ice.
I saw the picture.
And shuffleboard or whatever they could.
Were some points where it was fairly warm out there.
Yeah, I mean there is a time of year when it's a balmy 0 degrees, I suppose, and the other part time of the year when it's about 62 Fahrenheit. So yeah, he tried to keep them busy. They tried to celebrate, as I said, have parties, have birthdays, celebrate national days, whatever else they could do.
Here's a question that's come in, Richard, and this is along the way, and Umair is asking, he says, okay, we know that Shackleton did X, Y, Z. Who are the people who are accounting for what he did, who are talking about this? How do we know that it's just not, you know, a rosy picture put on a bad situation?
Yeah. Well, how do we know the facts, in other words, of what happened?
How do we have verification?
Well, many of the, as I said, interestingly, a lot of the men, most of the men who were on the expedition in these terrible conditions, you know, wet clothes, chafed to the bone, some of them, you know, always wet, always frozen, they all lived to old age. Mm. And so, that, you know, as I said, Shackleton kept them fit, kept them active. But they all wrote their diaries.
Okay.
And so it's in the diaries. And Margot Morrell, who wrote the book, and I have also subsequently read some of the diaries, all the facts and figures are there. Shackleton wrote a book called South. And I think all of that, all of the proof and all of the details are in that book. I really recommend the book South.
And this was, again, talking to Umair, this was that time of our... These were the golden years where people did keep diaries and they wrote down their things to... Yes. You know, and that's sharing with the next generation when, you know, you're too old to remember all the things that you did when you were 20.
Yeah.
And it's all there in print. And
it's all there in print. And all the things that Shackleton did to form teams for tough assignments, helping them overcome obstacles, leading effectively in a crisis, etc. They're all in the details.
I love the piece where he says the fine line, there is a very fine line between success and failure.
I've used that. Isn't it true? Isn't it true? Just ask the Canadian ice hockey teams.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's too fine a line. But that's true, isn't it, in life? And I think that he also said... he had many quotes, and the men were able to quote him for years to follow.
I think that's the beauty of what, when you take this, and obviously as you apply it to 2010 and you're doing this in workshops, what's the reaction from the people attending?
Sure. First of all, a lot of people haven't heard. If you were educated in England or Australia, this story is quite familiar from your history.
I mean, until I was reading your stuff, I'd never heard of Shackleton.
Not in Canada. No, I suppose that's, you know.
I've heard of other explorers and everything, but Shackleton, he didn't make my grade 12 history class.
No. It started, really, with the Wall Street Journal article and by Margot. Then she wrote the book and so forth. And then some quite well-known people got on, sort of started talking about it, saying, oh, I was a Shackleton fan. The head of Jaguar in North America, his name escapes me for the moment, he was a Shackleton fan. Apollo 13 commander James Lovell saw many similarities on how Shackleton and he led crews through crisis, and he spoke about it. So, you know, through these different personalities, the story got to be better known. Then there was a TV series called Shackleton, made by ABC and BBC, I think. Anyway, it was a TV program with Kenneth Branagh.
And that's Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
That's right. Yeah. Sorry, it was Australia and England. I forgot. Channel 4, that's right.
Okay.
I couldn't remember. And I got permission from Channel 4 to show excerpts of that. So I do that in the classroom. As well as historic films and pictures and an interview with Margot Morrell. So
we're going to take a short pause. When we come back, we're going to pick up this conversation. This is indeed Nightline. Great to have your involvement on the Twitter feed, Nightline DXB. That is exactly how you get here. 4001 is our SMS number. Great to have all your messages. Keep them coming in. The other area, we're gonna leave Shackleton for a bit, but I recommend going and taking a look at the book because there's a lot of writing out there. And it's just a fun read. It really is. It's interesting.
Fun, instructional, and it's just kind of different.
The other side that you do a lot of work with is one that is the thorn in most people's feet these days, customer service.
Yeah. Well, I like to train subjects that I think I have credibility in, and I've been a consumer and a buyer for all the years, so at least I can talk about that. And I have lots of stories, and of course I'm compiling those. But I have a program called Moments of Truth, and it's based on a book by Jan Carlsen.
Okay.
Who wrote a book about that. And what amazes me is that companies spend huge amounts of money on marketing and advertising their products and services, hoping to attract, new customers and retaining existing ones.
Yeah.
But this money is wasted, James, if staff fail to give a level of service required to encourage purchase and ultimately make a decision to return to the company.
Well, that should be obvious, shouldn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, some companies can say, 70% of their profits are based on 30% of their customers, or the Pareto principle, 80-20. It's more like 70-30 or 40-60 with lots of companies. Retaining your customers, obviously, is smart business.
Yeah.
To me, it's just common sense.
I mean, that's the common sense. That's the obvious one. But my own observations are that companies are really failing. I mean, there are companies that are doing great jobs. And those will start listing in. People will ask me, well, this company does a great job, that company does a great job. But often if you go towards some of the service sectors and some of the banks and these kind of areas, some of the real estate houses that have now folded up, their service, it was and continues to be horrific.
Yeah. Well, there's two words that come to mind as you were talking. One is consistency.
Mm.
This is important. That you don't confuse the customer, that you give a good, consistent level of customer service. The other one is seamless. James, sometimes you ring a reservation, you meet the reception of a store, a big store, and she's very friendly. Then you go to the sales assistant, and that's very friendly. But then you go to the cash register, and they don't look at you or say thank you.
Yeah.
To me, good customer service is not rocket science. It's just really good common sense. What a lot of companies don't hire gratitude. Hold on a second.
I want to back up.
Yeah.
Good customer service is common sense.
But it's not common practice.
It's not common practice.
That's what I wanted to add. It's common sense, but not common practice. And I think that you have to explain, as I do in my courses, I have to explain to people what it means to give customer service and how important it is to the organization that you give a good, consistent customer service. There's something called long-term value of the customer.
Mm.
And if customer service people can see that retaining a customer over 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, what the value, the overall total cumulative value is of that customer to that company, I think then they look at it a different way. So I approach it a little bit differently. Of course, I talk about the basics and so forth, but I try to get them to see from a different point of view.
Obviously companies are bringing you in because they perceive that they are not meeting that sure. standard, how successful are they in retooling their mindset? Because right. often it's a long road they've been on.
It's a long road. It takes time to change people's mindset. It takes time. Yeah. It's a little bit of consultancy involved as well. But what I try to do in a course is develop from that. If I do for one company in-house, I try to develop one or two of the participants to become customer service champions and to continue the ideas and the thoughts and the learning points that we discussed in the classroom.
How do you do that?
I mini-train the trainer.
Okay.
And I actually keep in touch. I do pre- and post-course visits. So on the post-course visit, which could be 1 or 2 months later, of a big customer service initiative, I go in there and I ask all the key players to come into a room, and we flip chart it up, 4 or 5, 6 flip charts, fill the wall with ideas, and just try to gauge where they are now. Hmm. Have they made a step forward? And then, of course, these customer service champions who have done a mini train the trainer, if you like, who are really keen to keep the thing going, they are then developing ideas, customer service training within the company to keep the thing going. And then I come in again to do a quality check.
Obviously, though, I mean, that's in a sense, someone might say, hold a second, aren't you trying to train yourself out of a consultancy?
I know.
But who better to understand the issues and the problems facing a company than those people actually working in it? Because you come in, you obviously consult, you watch, you
Absolutely.
Look. But it's still a short-term window.
Well, no, what happens is when I go into a company, usually the management will talk to me first.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know what's going to happen. They need this. They need that.
Yeah.
Tell them to do this, and they're not doing this. And then I run the training course.
Then you go to the shop floor.
And they say, well, you know what they're going to say? Is my manager going to come on this course?
Yeah.
It always happens. And I say, well, obviously, any trainer would say it. I'd love to do a course for the managers and the top management team, but they're going to get back to me. And, of course, I don't generally hear back.
Yeah.
They must come. They must come. The thing has to be driven from the top and bottom as well.
And that's got to be one of the hardest points to hit home, is that everyone needs this training. And it's not just a one-off. You need to constantly be, reasserting, looking at some of the new things that are happening and retuning yourself, because if you're so long in the pot of stew, you can't see anything but the stew.
That's right. We get so internally focused sometimes. You're making me hungry with the stew story. Team stands for together, each achieves more.
Yeah.
And for customer service to really work, from my way of thinking, it has to be seamless. It has to be consistent.
Hmm.
Management have to be involved.
I love it
if they attend the course, I must say.
Do you think part of when we start looking at the equation mm-hmm. of the breakdown in effective customer service, What percentage of that ratio would you put to the management that ultimately mm-hmm. are looking down on everything, but not, going? They're not on the floor.
Sure.
They're not the person who is meeting the clients. They're watching the interaction, but not actually participating in it themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think that if I talk about Jan Carlson, who was president of SAS, and I went over to Sweden and I wanted to meet him, and his secretary said, you won't find him. He's always out talking to the people. He was 70% of the time he was wandering around the organization. And I meet leaders like that today. They take the customer service initiatives seriously. Training is an investment, and the investment has to have a return. Today, companies are even more demanding as far as what they can see as a payoff. What is the cost benefit? What are we doing this for? And in order for that to happen, James, I think that the management have to be involved. What I love to do is to help people exceed their self-imposed limitations.
Self-imposed limitations.
Yeah, their previously self-imposed limitations. People don't realize how they can stretch, what they can really accomplish in life. And what I think any trainer out there will say the same thing. The buzz you get is seeing that person 1 or 2 years or 3 years down the road, and they see you again, and they say, Rick, something we as a group talked about had changed the way I look at my work.
Mm.
My work is based on an Eastern proverb, and that is, I hear and forget, I see and remember, but I do and understand.
Mm.
And any subject you look at, whether it's change or problem solving or leadership or customer service, they have to do to understand. They have to try things. And they must also question the way they do business. I had a boss once who did that. He said, Rick, we have to question the way we do business. And by doing that, like you've said earlier, revisiting the customer service problems over and over again, there is no ending. You have a training course. It's not that easy to wipe your hands and say, as a manager, they've been on the course. I'm expecting a lot of compliments to come in. It's not that easy.
If you're listening and you're saying, okay, I want to have a conversation with Richard, www.colestraining.com is the website. Go and check it out, www.colestraining.com. I'll post it all up on the blog site as well so you can find out more and find out a little bit about Shackleton as well. And always,
I love talking about it.
Yeah. Always great to have a fellow Canadian in the studio as well. I think people are starting to think this is like the, you know, we had a wonderful Canadian lady in yesterday.
Yourself.
I think it's the Canadian network here.
Yeah. Well, I got a few Canadian mates listening tonight. So
that's fantastic.
No, it's great. And it's great, especially appropriate with the Vancouver Games, with the Winter Games. Good luck for us, huh?
Exactly. Richard, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks,
great
James.
To have you here. And we're going to keep in touch. Who knows? Well, let's have that conversation.
Thank you very much indeed.
This is Nightline Dubai Eye, 103.8 FM. Again, let me give you Richard Cole's website address, www.colestraining.com. Always great to have the conversations about customer service and leadership. You can never have enough. We're going to go to the UAE tonight. When we come back, Magnus Nystedt, the gadget guru,